Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please, the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also reach us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, the criminalization of black males. Are black males being systemically criminalized? What could be the origin of the criminalization of black males in America, the good old U.S.? Before we get into our show, I would like to first say, I would like to encourage my brothers and sisters to behave within the boundaries of the law. Respect yourself, respect your family, respect your community, respect adults, youth, the old, the young, property, those in authority, etc. Remember, in some instances, you are the gateway to what happens in your life. And sometimes there is a Trojan horse. Stay away from people, places, and things that diminish your existence, mental health, physical health, spiritual health, and future. Be upright, trustworthy, dedicated, honest, kind, loving, knowledgeable, and wise. Also remember, trouble is easy to get into and hard to get out of. If you do not control yourself, others will seek to control you. You may not have a choice in how they choose to do so. Ephesians 6:12-20. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. It seems like blacks have been targeted. When you look at U.S. prisons, blacks have long outnumbered whites in U.S. prisons, from CNN. Black Americans are incarcerated in state prisons at nearly 5 times the rate of white Americans, according to a new report from the Sentencing Project, right? They said that 1 in 81 black adults per 100,000 people in the United States is serving time in a state prison. That's from data from the U.S. Census and the U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics. They say for every action, there is an equal and opposite action, right? Or reaction. But when it comes to black males, there appears to be a disproportionate and opposite action. Why are black males getting the short end of the criminalization stick? Whack, right? Are black males more aggressive, dangerous, or criminal than white males? Are blacks targeted by folks, authorities, and law enforcement more? Is it just because they are black? How can less than 13% of the population outnumber over 60% of the population in prison? What up with that? From Penn Capital Star. They said Section 1 of the 13th Amendment reads, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States, right? In other words, instead of allowing enslavement and involuntary servitude of people simply because they are black, the 13th Amendment, by use of what they call the tricky language, still allows the enslavement and involuntary servitude of people simply because of racistly created, racistly targeted, and racistly enforced criminal laws enacted in and stemming from something called the Black Codes. The South immediately created the Black Codes, right? This is after Civil War, y'all, when slaves have been free, right? So those codes criminalized recently freed blacks by creating and selectively enforcing vagrancy, right? You just wandering around. You ain't got no job. You don't have no house. You don't have nothing, right? You just got off the plantation. You don't want to go back there. So you basically just hanging out on the planet, right? Loitering, well, standing around, right? Curfew laws. Well, where you going at? Because you don't want to go back to the plantation, and you can't walk but so far, you know, in a day. The laws also created and selectively enforced laws that made it illegal for blacks to refuse exploitative and abusive so-called jobs. So they made it illegal for them to, that means it criminalized them in their condition, right? They had to take these jobs, had to basically become slaves after they were free. Just not owned, just forced by the government. I guess that's a different type of ownership. The Black Codes legislation went into effect beginning in 1865 and up to the early 60s. For you folks that think that's some old, old stuff. Not a long time ago. Y'all remember a guy named Martin Luther King, Malcolm X? They were created for the sole purpose of legalizing the criminalization of recently freed blacks along with their descendants, and doing so in a manner consistent with the tricky language of the 13th Amendment. That's very important there, because that creates, that's a long time of this theory, this idea being embedded in the minds of powerful and not so powerful white folks in this country. It's going to have an impact of on how some white folks interact with black men, right? It was illegal for blacks to quit their jobs. In short, it was illegal for blacks not to submit to the new system of slavery, just as it was illegal for blacks to resist the old system of slavery. It was illegal for blacks to speak out publicly against racism, they said. If they did so, they'd be arrested, charged, found guilty, fined, and jailed for seditious speech, right? So I don't know if you know about it. It was punishable speaking out, period, when you're a slave. So here they got this thing right here. So I don't know if you heard, you know, as I just mentioned, Martin Luther King was jailed, beaten in the street for peacefully marching against racism. That's in the 60s. It came from 1865. They also said it was illegal for a black man to raise their voice in the presence of a white woman. Illegal. That's on the books. They're not, right? This comes directly from slavery. As a slave who dared raise his voice is a slave who would raise his hand. A slave who would dare raise his hand is a slave who would dare fight, even kill, in self-defense or for freedom. A black man who is afraid to raise his voice towards his enslaver's woman is afraid to raise his voice at his enslaver. Such a black man is a conquered and defeated spirit. Conquered and defeated spirits are no threat to the white power structure. All right? A strong black man is perceived as a threat, be it vocal or physical. It was illegal for blacks to testify in court except against other blacks. Maybe this is the original reason black people hated snitches. It had nothing to do with criminal behavior or endeavor. Every man has a right and responsibility to defend himself and resist tyranny. To resist tyranny is to deny your antagonist information against revolutionaries. All right? And I'm just going to leave that right there with the snitch thing. Black folks were already targeted for slavery, segregation, suspicion of revolution, oppression, suppression, subjugation, hatred, racism, bigotry, and tyranny by American society and government legally and openly until sometime in the 60s. The mid-60s is about 58 years ago. Policing is akin to slave catching, targeting black people. I'm thinking, old habits die hard, and it is difficult for blacks to shake off the yoke of degradation, at least in the eyes of some folks or institutions. Though many blacks were literate, they were jobless, homeless, and unwanted as free men. White men conspired to target the black man's vulnerable position after the Civil War, thus criminalizing blacks because they were socially, economically disadvantaged. Does that sound familiar? Could the enslavement of blacks have set the standard for targeting the already targeted black population for criminalization? Criminalized black, the black initiative and power. They criminalized you moving forward in any kind of a way, method, shape, form, or fashion. That is not genius. It's just evil. So far, it's a yes for blacks being targeted by folks, authorities, and law enforcement just because they are black. Laws may change, but people do not always change with the laws. Right? From the Pew Research.org. They said minorities of both black and white Americans say black people are treated less fairly than whites in dealing with police and by the criminal justice system as a whole. In a 2019 center survey, 84% of black adults said that in dealing with police, blacks are generally treated less fairly than whites. 63% of the whites said the same thing. Similarly, 87% of blacks and 61% of whites said the U.S. criminal justice system treats black people less fairly. They also said that black adults were about 5 times as likely as whites to say they've been unfairly stopped by police because of their race or ethnicity, 44% versus 9%. Black men are especially likely to say this. They say 59% say they've been unfairly stopped, 31% of black women. Got to hold that black man down. So they've been holding the black man down. Holding the black man down, has a lot of nuances to it. Little things that they do that just, you know, chipping away at your manhood. While Democrats and white Republicans have different views, right? They say of how black people are treated by police and the wider justice system. Overwhelming majorities of white Democrats say black people are treated less fairly than whites by the police, 88%. That's, did I read that right? Oh, that's white Democrats. Yeah. And criminal justice system, 86%. These are Democrats, right? In a 2019 poll, they said about 4 in 10 white Republicans agree. At 43% and 39% respectively. Nearly two-thirds of black adults, 65%, say they've been in situations where people acted as if they were suspicious of them because of their race or ethnicity. Only a quarter of the white adults say that's happened to them. Roughly a third of both Asian and Hispanic adults, 34% and 37%, said that. Most blacks say someone has acted suspicious of them as if they weren't smart. Black Americans are far less likely than whites to give police high marks on the way they do their job, right? Let's say a third of black adults said that police in their community did not did an excellent or good job in using the right amount of force. 33% compared with 75% of whites said they did a good job. 75% whites. Treating on ethnic groups equally, right? 35% versus 75% again. So holding officers accountable for misconduct. 31% black, 70% white, right? So we not in agreement. Police officers and the general public have tended to view fatal encounters between black people and police very differently. Two-thirds said most such encounters are isolated incidents and not signs of the broader problem. In a companion survey for more than 4,500 U.S. adults, 60% of the public called such incidents sign of a broader problem between police and black people, they said. But the views given by police themselves were sharply differentiated by race, they said. A majority of black officers, 57%, said that such incidents are evidence of a broader problem, while 27% of the white officers and 26% of the Hispanic officers said so. Around two-thirds of police officers, 68%, said in 2016 said that the demonstrations over the deaths of black people during, the George Floyd and all that stuff, right, was motivated by a great extent by anti-police bias. Only 10% said in a separate question that protesters were primarily motivated by a genuine desire to hold police accountable for their actions. They said, where else police officers review different by race, only about a quarter of white officers, 27%, but around 6 in 10 of their black colleagues, 57%, said such protests were motivated at least to some extent by a genuine desire to hold police accountable. White officers and their black colleagues have starkly different views of fundamental questions regarding the situation of blacks in American society. White officers, 92%, but only 29% of their black colleagues said that the U.S. had made the changes needed to assure equal rights for blacks. The majority of officers said in 2016 that the reason between the blacks, the relations between the police and their department and black people in the community they serve were excellent. 8% good, 40%, right? So excellent, 8% said good, 40%. However, far less shares saw excellent or good community relations with whites, 91%, Asians, 88%, and 70%. All right, so it's an overwhelming majority of police officers, 86%, said in this 2016 survey that high-profile fatal encounters between black people and police officers had made their jobs harder. They became more worried about safety, 93%. Heightened tensions between police and blacks, 75%. Officers reluctant to use force when appropriate, 67%. Or to question people who seem suspicious, 72%. That sounds like a police protest by refusing to do their job, resulting from police abusing the authority on members of the black community or using force when it was not appropriate and harassing people who they deem suspicious who are not behaving suspiciously. There are those who hide behind the uniform to act out in the community with impunity. If criminologists can see the disparities, why can't law enforcement? It is not the job of police to choke black men to death for misdemeanor offenses, non-threatening offenses, shoot fleeing suspects in the back multiple times, shoot mental health teams 16 times while on the ground, gun down a black man after he informs them that he is licensed to carry at close range with his woman and child in the car. Shoot a 12-year-old black children playing with toy guns in a park. shoot a black man in a toy store, attempting to purchase a toy gun, assault, arrest, and detain a woman for not putting out a cigarette during a traffic stop, place their knee in a man's neck who is handcuffed behind his back while he yells, "I can't breathe." This is a serious problem. Looks like black folks are being targeted, demonized, assaulted, and murdered under the cloak of law enforcement. As you already have that, you coming out of your house like that, it's not going to have a good outcome, a favorable outcome, at least not for the black person, the black male especially, right? So anyway, education law. What is the school-to-prison pipeline? The school-to-prison pipeline refers to a set of policies and practices that make the criminalization and incarceration of children and youth more likely and the attainment of a high quality of education less likely. The school-to-prison pipeline operates both directly and indirectly through the misapplication of zero-tolerance school discipline, right? They said these kids are, children and youth are being sent directly to the juvenile and criminal system by criminalizing a wide variety of student behaviors. This results in hundreds of thousands of arrests and referrals of students to the juvenile and criminal justice system each year. Many and perhaps most of these school-based arrests are for misdemeanor offenses that do not pose a serious ongoing threat to school safety. Once have been addressed by a teacher or a principal, but are now falling to the police and juvenile court. So the principal and the teacher used to address this. Now it's falling to the, they say, oh, no, you're under arrest. No. So schools indirectly push students into the school-to-prison pipeline through policies and practices that limit the opportunities to learn and make them more likely to drop out of school and ultimately wind up being incarcerated, right? Out-of-school suspensions, expulsions, high-stakes testing, referral to alternative schools that have inferior educational programs, failure to reintegrate students returning from expulsions and placements in the juvenile justice system. Now, alternative schools should not have inferior educational programs, but also whether you have it. So that's the setup right there. So you think somebody's going to an alternative school because it's an alternative to mainstream school. But if that alternative school is not really functioning as an school, it's not educating the students, there lies a problem. Now, that's true. Bad enough, they say that the hell mainstream schools are inadequate. They said it's a sharp rise in the use of all these practices in communities across the country over the last decade represents a prioritization of swift and severe punishment of students over the thoughtful consideration of how to better meet their educational needs, right? Such as through academic and disciplinary interventions, counseling services, health services, special education programs, and other wraparound services. As a result, huge numbers of students have been put on the path to academic failure that is difficult to interrupt and often has devastating long-term consequences. I'm not making excuses for people's behavior either. And please don't get it twisted. I'm just reading an article. And I think it was important because it has a point that has happened, right? Sometimes children commit crimes and they got to go to jail. I get that. So don't get it twisted. Sacramento, The Observer, says disproportionate suspensions of black students, especially in early grades, fuel what's known as the school-to-prison pipeline. So that's the learning phase. That's a who am I, developing my personality, what kind of person I'm going to be, the who am I, I'm getting into the groove of who I am, right? So early stages are very important of how you relate to these children. The high rate of black suspension starting from kindergarten to third grade, where youth were suspended at a rate at almost 10 times higher the statewide average, begins to reinforce the view that black students are less than, cause more trouble, and were less apt to succeed, Dr. Wood said. So Dr. Wood is one of a set of twins who, after their mother was sent to prison for a crime of passion, him and his brother taken into, the state. They wound up with a foster family in McLeod, California, a small lumber town in the woods south of Mount Shasta. So what happened to them? The black students at the what they observed, the black students at the elementary school were bullied mercilessly by a swarm of white kids, and every time they tried to defend themselves, it seemed they were suspended, not their antagonist. And Dr. Wood said he had an amazingly positive spirit in the experience in the first grade, but in the fifth grade, he went from having teachers who genuinely cared about him and was at least indifferent to a teacher who saw him as a problem and wanted to destroy him. She used to call them cottonheads or nigglets. Should have been fired right there. What you calling these little kids cottonheads and nigglets? What's up with that? That's when the parents come up and punch people in the mouth in some places that we know. See, it didn't happen here. So they were suspended, he was suspended 42 times in the fifth grade and his brother 24 times, right? Turned around in his seat, got suspended. He blurted out the answer without raising his hand, suspended. If a bully puts him in class, he puts him back a little bit, he would be the one to get suspended, not the bully. So we got some racism going on here. Apparently they in a little white town, right? Little backwood white town. They were being bullied by a group of boys, and it was absolutely racial, and the school was unwilling to do anything about it. Right? Vulnerable, right? That's what they call being vulnerable. They tried to escape on their bikes, but they stole their bikes, dismounted them, and left them in the woods. When the foster mom and dad came up to the school to confront the bullies, teachers, and administrators, the school took out a restraining order forbidding him to come on campus, the foster dad. He went up to stand up for these boys. They took out a restraint, right? This is the system working against the brothers right here, right? The suspensions made him hate school and feel like school was a waste of time. He went from being a top-performing student to a low-performing student. He said it was not about the other students. It was about the teacher. He had a sixth grade teacher with tons of passion, energy, enthusiasm, and excitement that made you learn to love school. He affirmed me in the classroom and sent me to writer's camp. All right, so that's his experience. Students who are suspended at high such rates often come from families that are torn apart, people who are relying on social services, and a generation of people who don't have economic or social mobility. Something like what the slaves didn't have, right? So we got this scenario repeating itself. And these same group of people being targeted by white folks, right? And the system, in this case, the school system. The brothers were named Luke and Josh, right? They were subjected to racist students and school staff in their small backwoods town of predominant white folk. That is enough to make you not want to come to school or use violence as a method of defending yourself against bullies because no one else would. An adult should have defended them against the unjust teacher and the school system. Foster children have social workers and advocates. Where were they in this scenario? The constant suspensions for small things like turning around in his seat and blurting out an answer and pushing a bully back are methods of teaching a child that he is bad, that he is different, that he is less than the white student, and that he is a bad boy, or criminalizing him. This school is cultivating criminal behavior while subjecting black males to the tyranny of racism. Fortunately, this guy was strong enough to survive that. He's a doctor. He got his doctorate. From AtlantaDailyWorld.com. 43 million adults in the United States who struggle with adult literacy. 43 million. Literacy among black adults. A 2019 report from the National Center for Education Statistics, which cited data from 2012 to 2014, found that 23% of black adults in the country were considered to be low literacy compared to 35% of white adults and 34% of Hispanic adults. That's a lot of folk. Even when you add all of them together, that's a lot of folk. For black adults, issues with literacy have come about in a variety of ways. We can trace the problem back to Jim Crow laws treating black people as second-class citizens, as Dr. Brett Grant, a postdoctoral fellow at the Black Education Research Collective at Teachers College, Columbia University. Experts like Grant say misunderstanding why black people have lower literacy rates deserves more attention. We have to address the issues of racism in this country and how it embeds itself in the policies and practices that impact the kinds of education that people receive, he said. Worldinblack.com says 46 states, in 46 states, black students were referred to law enforcement at higher rates than the total rate of referral for all students across the country, according to federal data analyzed by the Center for Public Integrity. Some places don't have much integrity. The national average showed 4.5 law enforcement referrals per 1,000 students. On average, 8.4 black students per 1,000 saw a law enforcement referral. Just to mention, they're not the only different demographic in this category. Students with disabilities in every state, Native American students in 32 states, all Hispanic students in 21 states, and white students in 8 states all had referral rates higher than the total rate of referrals nationwide. With the black man leading a pack to prison. I wonder, can I consider myself white? Can you do that? Anyway, states with the highest referral of black students per 1,000 enrolled: Virginia, 25.7, Pennsylvania, 23.6, New Hampshire, 22.3, South Dakota, 20.2, and Wisconsin, 20. Rather than preventing crime, school police officers have been linked with increased arrests for non-criminal offenses, right? Youthful behavior, fueling the school to prison pipeline, according to an April 21 report from the Brookings Institution. The presence of police in schools, they said, is fueled by dehumanization of children of color, which suggests that there needs to be constant surveillance of these children in school, says author Monique Morris. She told that to NPR. The number of police in schools grew out of fear of school shooting, but in 2018, Washington Post investigation of nearly 200 school shootings identified only two examples of schools Two examples of school police officers successfully intervening. The investigation also found that black students made up only 16.6% of the school population, but experienced 34% of the school shootings, or twice the rate. Children of color are far more likely to experience campus gun violence, nearly twice as much for Hispanic students and three times as much for black students. There isn't much evidence indicating that police officers in schools make schools safer. What they do is increase the likelihood that black and brown children are going to be involved in a legal system, and often. Literacy, MidSouth.org said, according to the National Adult Literacy Survey, 70% of all incarcerated adults cannot read at the fourth grade level, meaning they lack the reading skills to navigate mainly everyday tasks or hold down anything but lower paying jobs. Data shows that those with sufficient income earned by work are the most prone to crime. So that's very interesting right there. We have, they talked about the dilemma of students in school with guns, gangs in schools, revenge sought in school. 85% of all juveniles who interface with the juvenile court system are functionally low illiterate. Juvenile incarceration reduces the probability of high school completion and increases the probability of incarceration later in life. High school dropouts are 3.5 times more likely than high school graduates to be arrested in their lifetime. High school dropouts are 63% more likely to be incarcerated than their peers with four-year college degrees. Mississippi has the second highest incarceration rate in the nation. The average adult inmate reads on a sixth grade level when admitted. Half of the state's inmates never finished high school. I hear the program now where you got to finish to get out. Anyway, so children are not being educated if they are not in school, right? So if you just keep suspending them, they're getting on your nerves. You can't suspend kids just because they're getting on your nerves, right? So they can't be educated. You're just setting them back, setting them further back, right? So they can't be educated if they're not in school. Due to suspensions, once they learn that they are bad, they begin to accept the label and maybe drop out of school or do something that gets them incarcerated, like defending themselves against the antagonist, white schoolmates, or racist school staff. Remember, a black slave standing up against his oppressor was viewed as a threat, and his punishment was whatever his captor decided. So I can see how, you know, not defending racism in terms of not defending these black males in school, and I'm not blaming schools. The schools are not, it's not the job of schools to rear children, because you parents, you need to raise a child in a way that he when he goes old, he has something to fall back on, because maybe he might not listen to you. But he has to need something to change. So he'll have he'll have in his back pocket or wherever he puts it at, back of his head, he'll be able to make that turn. But if he don't have that information, he won't be able to make that turn as easily, and he might not survive his own decisions. Anyway, Antebellum Slavery by PBS, right? The punishment took many forms, including whippings, tortures, mutilation, imprisonment, and being sold away from the plantation. Slaves were even sometimes murdered, right? Slave masters monopolized armed power, severely restricting slaves' access to weapons. Slave masters also closely monitored their slave activities, limiting their movement and freedom of association. Under these circumstances, organization and planning were next to impossible. I don't know if y'all know about the Black Panthers. They were infiltrated by the FBI and at the higher levels. You understand what I'm saying? Everything that they was doing, they was on them. Instead of these people correcting the brutality of the Oakland and L.A., the police all over the United States, instead of them correcting them guys, they came down on the people who were responding to the abuses of the police. Right? That's what we call that monitoring, limiting movement and freedom of an association. As long as you got your eyes and ears in there, you monitor and limiting the movement and freedom of an organization, because you're always going to be able to act, counteract whatever their plan is. Infiltration. Remember that, y'all. That works both ways. Anyway. On rare occasions, when the enslaved escaped their masters, they faced yet other mechanisms of white control, militants, local patrols, and vigilante. Those are the origin of today's police departments, right? Rebels who avoided the net of surveillance and enacted their conspiracies were always dealt with a brutal fashion. So, as you can see, read about what happened to the Black Panther Party. Fred Hampton. This should be tweet about what happened, folks. Public hangings and decapitations were common punishment. Other rebels were alive. I guess that's cutting off your testicles alive, burnt alive, or broken on the wheel. All these instances, punishment was meant to demonstrate the totalizing effect of white supremacy, terrorizing those who remained enslaved. Under these circumstances, the organization and planning were next to impossible. Beware of those who seek to prevent black folks from organizing and planning for themselves in their best interest. They are the enemy. I go on with the history of assaults, murders, and disenfranchisement of black people who have suffered in America during slavery, after the Civil War, Jim Crow, segregation, and to date. But that will require another show. Directly, if a society that fears, hates, devalues black people establishes institutions based on their fear, hatred, and devalue of black people, those institutions will have a tendency to target black people in their application or lack of application. If the laws change and the negative ideology of the people do not, the threat remains for black people. In short, the abuse and criminalization continues, and you get white women lying on black men to law enforcement. Law enforcement aggressively, violently pursuing black people. Incarceration of blacks under fictitious, exaggerated charges. Judges sentencing blacks to longer prison sentences. That being said, there's more reason for black people to unite under a moral ethical code that supports and nurtures the black community. We cannot succeed by failing, living and dying in a chaotic environment, willfully denying ourselves the very thing we need to survive and enhance our quality of life. In Philadelphia, shootings are starting to slow, except among kids and teens. The shootings are increasing among children. When you resolve your problem with a gun, anything could be a catalyst for gun violence. Gun violence begets more gun violence. I asked the young man, why do you shoot so much? Not you, like your group, you know, each group. He told me if he beat the other guy up, he would only go home to get his gun, come back and shoot him. So they skip the fist fight and get right to the gun fight. Fear will make you kill someone before they kill you. Jealousy, covetousness, greed, ego, revenge, emotional pain, self-defense, loyalty, economic and moral deprivation, and more attribute to the homicide rate on this hamster wheel of death and destruction. These are vicious criminal acts on display that reinforce negative impressions of black males. The media drives the violence between opposing groups and inflates the already violent perception of black males, generating greater fear of their presence. Now, someone feels unsafe and fears for their life when encountering black males. This is the cycle of demonizing black males that allows people to accuse them of being a threat, a lethal threat, and devalued. That makes it easier to target them, incarcerate them, assault them, and murder them. If black lives matter, black life must be preserved on all levels of existence. Philadelphia's youngest victims, from the article. The majority of these victims are, regardless of the age, black. Nearly 80% of the average age of all fatal and non-fatal shooting victims is 29. There is no question that there is, statistically speaking, a significant increase in the number of juvenile victims in the shootings. They said that it is extremely concerning, said the district attorney Larry Krasner. This coincides with the pandemic. It coincides with the national phenomenon of gun violence increase, and it coincides with a historic buy of guns that happened all over the country. Something like a million guns in a single year. Gun purchases in the U.S. set a record in 2020 when 22.8 million were sold, according to the industry data last year. 16.4 million guns were sold. So he's coinciding violence with, I heard people say that about the pandemic. I'm not feeling that. I will see how people could buy more guns with all these black folks in the street rioting. I could see how certain people would be getting more guns. I could see how some black people might be getting some more guns because of the murder, the increase of the gun violence like that, these robberies. Cause everything is not just people having these beefs. We have robberies and things like that. You have situations, you know, mass shooters, people just on edge now. Several shooters have left a group of, have felt like a group of assassinations. Well, on March 28th, the walk to school provided fatal for a 14-year-old boy who was gunned down near Mastery of Gratz Charter High School in North Philadelphia. Three youths approached him in all black clothing and gunned him down. He jumped him and gunned him down. Speaks to the level of violence that we continue to see in our city. Our children should be safe. The city is offering a $30,000 reward for tips leading to the capture of the gunmen. Tragedies such as these have impacted on everyone from the immediate family to the community and everyone in between. Imagine. Image is important. Media coverage of the tragedy and brutality of gun violence facilitate and reinforce the idea that black males are dangerous. I don't know. I'm going to make it a point to try to look to see if I see any white guys on there in numbers, toting guns, talking about who they kill. But every time I see it, I'm telling you, it's probably the same guys, New York, Chicago. And I've seen some Philadelphia guys on there, you know. But mainly, I see the Chicago guys for some reason. Old Block and FB, whatever they are over there, Gangster Disciples, fighting the Old Block, whatever. Anyway, the best way to improve your image, people. The best way to improve your image is to improve your standard of living from the individual, families, communities, to the collective group. Develop a standard of living that promotes, supports, validates, and nurtures you. Create or utilize moral, ethical, codes of conduct. Create or utilize moral, ethical codes of conduct, expectations, and boundaries that will assist you in becoming an asset to your family and community. If there is police interaction, let it be for a cause, not just because. Be not without purpose. Know where you are and at least have an idea where you want to be. Incarceration cannot be an accepted outcome, goal, or badge of honor. So I need to say that again. From worldinblack.com. In 46 states, black students are referred to law enforcement at higher rates than the total rate of referrals for all students. See, these are just different sources that I was able to get this information from. Education Law Center said the determination of school quality should not place undue weight on standardized test scores. Rather should include a range of variables that will both provide a more complete picture to the community and avoid the negative consequences of the No Child Left Behind approach, right? The No Child Left Behind approach uses sanctions to compel school improvement must be adjusted. Struggling schools need guidance and support to meet their needs for their students, not the rigid and punitive consequences currently favored. Elementary Secondary Education Act should also place much more emphasis on school climate and behavior support issues that currently contribute to school to prison on pipeline. I know they have people in schools called the climate staff. They should also limit school exclusion and reduce the flow of students from school to the justice system, as we talked about, right? These approaches are better at promoting academic success and school safety than zero tolerance approaches, right? Zero tolerance is going to get you thrown out of school, no education, incarceration, so forth like that, you know. Those are there, based on your decisions, right? So you have to make sound decisions, right? Change their disciplinary policies and practices by embracing prevention and non-exclusionary intervention strategies over exclusionary discipline with extremely positive results. Educators must have reported overall decreases in exclusionary disciplinary and justice system interventions. Progress in closing racial disciplinary disparities and increased academic achievement. See, they are acknowledging racial disciplinary disparities, right? As Dr. Wood was saying, right? Some communities, correlations of stakeholders, including juvenile courts, school districts, law enforcement agencies, and school social service providers, have come together to reduce the spiraling school arrest rates for incidents that do not merit police intervention or referral to juvenile court. So the key issue is referral to juvenile justice system for incidents that do not merit police intervention. If you fear, hate, or have a diminished perception and preconceived ideas about the black population you provide service for, you become judge and jury on the highway to the criminalization of black males. As for black males, reduce or change your behavior in order to impact on police interaction, learn to resolve conflict, and learn to avoid conflict. Respect rules, regulations, other people, and yourself. Learn about the function of the systems that you come in contact with. Know your rights. Know what is right. Do what is right. NBC News, a 14-year-old boy fatally shot in the back in South Carolina by a convenience store owner who wrongly accused him of shoplifting and chased him after the confrontation, authorities said, right? It's interesting because this shop owner criminalized this 14-year-old boy. Rick Child, 58, was arrested on Monday and charged with murder in the death of Cyrus Carmack Belton. They said, the county sheriff said he did not shoplift anything, even if he did. I think the boy had some water. He did. What is this shooting him about? How do you come to the point where I'm going to shoot you in the back for snatching some water out of my store? Is that a death sentence in South Carolina, shoplifting? So he entered the, Cyrus entered the convenience store and at some point the teenager and the owner started arguing. Child started arguing. They didn't detail what led to the dispute. Eventually, Cyrus left the store and took off running. The owner armed a pistol and his son chased the team toward a nearby apartment complex. Lott said, adding that Cyrus fell at one point and got back up. So I think Lott is the son of Child. Child's son said, Lott is the county sheriff. Excuse me. So Child's son said Cyrus had a gun, which is when the owner shot him in the back as he was running away. Authorities later recovered a gun next to the teen's body, but the sheriff said there was no evidence the teen ever pointed the weapon at Child or his son. So Democratic State Rep. Todd Rutherford, in an Instagram post, a lot of what's this social media stuff going on with the people? And I don't know. I don't understand why everybody running to the social media to start posting stuff. But he said what happened to the teen wasn't an accident. It's something that the black community has experienced for generations, being racially profiled, then shot down in the street like a dog. So this is this Democratic state rep is recognizing, acknowledging the criminalization of this black youth, right? The criminalization of black men and boys and the historic painting of them as aggressors have time and again led to deadly and heartbreaking circumstances. Cyrus Carmack Belton has since been declared innocent, but his supposed crime of shoplifting a bottle of water should not have cost him his life. He said, I pray justice is swift. Well, justice is going to be probably the same way it's always been. We'll see. First, why wasn't the son of the store owner arrested immediately in the murder of the 14-year-old, Cyrus Carmack Belton? It is a known fact that both Child and his son chased Belton and no crime had been committed and there was no imminent threat to their lives, and they pursued Belton, who was trying to get away from them, posing no threat and no lethal threat. The only lethal threat that day was Child and his son or accomplice. Only Child has been arrested. Child appears to think that it's okay to chase a black youth down and shoot him in the back, especially if someone says he has a gun. Now Child will attempt to sell the narrative of fearing for his life in hopes that it will supersede his unlawful pursuit of his 14-year-old victim. So this is part of this is how this thing is. This thing about black people being aggressors and, they're demonizing them to the point where it's easy to kill them and get away with it. That's ill-advised. Number one, you got to live with the fact that you took a life. Number two, you have to live in that. You're going to still be in that community where you did that? That's not a good look. It is evident that Child devoured the life of 14-year-old Cyrus Carmack Belton and others in his community. Child was going to kill one of those N-words one day simply because of his perception of black males and because he wanted to. He's running down with a gun. He wants to shoot him. Child psychologically criminalized black males, which led to him shooting at them. Child is not alone in his assumptions. Child was not criminalized for shooting at other community members, although he was committing criminal acts. News 19 WLTX says Child, who has a concealed weapons permit, shouldn't have it, right? Had previously fired at people he suspected of shoplifting on two other occasions in the past 8 years and never faced charges. See, this is what we're talking about. If this man, if the law had done what they supposed to do with Child, this kid would still be alive. Or he, put it this way, this man would not have shot him down that day. Of course, I don't know, the brother was in there. I don't know if he was stealing anything or not. It said he wasn't stealing. He never stole nothing. So anyway, I wonder why Child was not arrested for attempting to murder members of the community 8 years ago or within that eight-year period. Child learned that it was okay to shoot at the local residents. Not arresting Child validated his lethal assaults and contributed to his demonizing, diminishing, devaluing of the life of 14-year-old Cyrus Carmack Belton. Shades of Trayvon Martin, who was devalued, demonized, and murdered by George Zimmerman. Man, he got away with that. From Zipper.com, they say the most common ethnicity of police officers is 60% white, followed by Hispanic and Latino, 18%, black and or African American, 12.9%. An unknown 4.6%. From the Washington Post, Philadelphia has a greater imbalance with one-third of the population white, but 59% white police. Cook County around Chicago has a 42% white residents, but 55% white police. From the Washington Post, police departments across the country have become less overwhelmingly white, see, 1900s, according to a study published by the Federal Bureau of Justice Statistics. The agency's survey of police departments found that the share of white non-Hispanic police fell from 78.5% in 1997 to 71.5% in 2016. The white share of the county's population, however, fell over that time from 72% to 63%. So the change in police did not keep pace with the demographic change. I would like to think that race relations in America have disappeared, but it would be foolish to think that with so much evidence of racism, bigotry, and hatred prevailing, law enforcement has a history of targeting black people in their hiring and interaction with black folks. Maintaining a white power force is a way of maintaining white power. Historically, the police force always been predominantly white. We have come a long way, and we still have a long way to go. We must remember that they are white first and police officers second. Whatever feelings, misconceptions, and fears they had about blacks or may have or may not have, right? Because I'm not saying all white police officers have these misconceptions about blacks being, you know, criminal and devalued and things like that, right? But if they do have those, it doesn't just go away because they put on a blue suit. So they are white males first, and then police officers second. So, and we all are whatever we are born. You're not the job that you signed up for. You are who you are raised, right? How you are raised. So hopefully, I don't know. It sounds like, and it seems like, you know, as we talk about police activity and criminalizing black folks, you have black folks criminalizing black folks. You have black folks just committing, even white police officers just committing violence against people because they are violent people. They may not even be a racially motivated. Just might be that. And it might be racially motivated. Could be not. But extremely violent people in the police force just hurting people, taking advantage of the power that they have. TRTworld.com. A white Minneapolis police officer, policeman killing George Floyd by kneeling on his neck, right? For 8 minutes, as the black man said he couldn't breathe, has exposed once again the strained race relations between black communities and police. So this is not an imaginary thing that we're talking about tonight. This is something that is real. It's not nothing coming out. I'm not pulling a rabbit out of the hat. It's real talk. We need to get it together. People need to, you guys who don't like black people, black, white, Chinese, Latino, or whatever, or don't like whoever, when you join the police force, you got to put that stuff somewhere in the back. I don't know how you do it. I haven't the slightest idea how you could get rid of that. If you could, because some of the, historically, the things that I've seen white people do to black people who are, I don't know. It's brutal, you know, it's inhuman. Cutting off giblets and stuff like that, as they said you should do with the slaves and stuff like that. You know, hanging people, which is what we more recently seen, burning people, you know, stuff like that, torturing them. And I think they drug a guy by with a chain on the back of a truck some years ago. You know, look, doesn't matter how long ago it happened, it's just continuing. It's like, it's too much. We don't know. I don't know what else is happening. I haven't researched crimes of due to racism, but I'm sure that there's a whole lot. Apparently, it's this in the police or within the law enforcement, right? They say police killed more than 1,000 people in 2019, almost a quarter of them of African-American descent. So they killed 1,000 people, a quarter of them was African-American descent. So we only, we less than 13% of the population here. So you got to wonder, so why is it a disproportionate amount of people of African-American descent, black people or whatever, you know, receiving the brunt of police brutality, police interaction, long sentences. Why is that happening? According to a research group mapping police violence, they said it tracks 90% of police killings. People, black people, are 3 times more likely to be killed by police than their white counterparts. And when they are shot by police, they are twice as likely to be unarmed. So if they were fear of black people, that seems like that goes on. We're taking one back to slavery. There's a fear of them getting together, moving against the authority, because they you know when you've been had your foot on somebody's neck, the minute you take it off, that person is likely to want to smash you. You understand? He might want to put his foot on your neck or in some other orifices. You understand what I'm saying? So I get the whole fear thing. I can see why people would be afraid of black people because, hey, we've been treating these people so bad. Here I am putting my thing down on them, putting them up a little bit. I'm disrespecting them because I feel like I got to do that or whatever. I'm just that way. I feel I got to do that to get through them so they fear me. I'd rather them fear me than to love me. I don't know what it is. But it's, since you have the power, his reaction to that, he's going to submit to being disrespected, beaten, or murdered, or he's going to fight back. Because you're going to create that kind of person. It always does. So maybe the whole thing about a moral code, I should have said that for the police. Did I miss that? Sorry, y'all. So police officers need to live by, develop and adhere to a moral code. Before you even get to the law, you need to observe a moral code that respects life, the life of other people and other communities that don't look like you, that are not as protected by the law as you are, right? Black people are 3 times more likely to be killed by police than their white counterparts. That is a shame. They also said they lack comprehensive training. Before the delving into the race issue, let's look at how the tendency to use force is instilled from as early as when aspiring officers are in training, they said. Academics place more emphasis on how to use weapons than on how to de-escalate a potentially violent situation. I guess that comes from fear. Why am I messing around with this guy, telling him please calm down, while he's reaching in his pocket, pulling out a 12-inch blade, trying to shank me, or reaching for his little pistol, trying to, you know. So, you know, and that job is not for a person of faint of heart. So it's a way to de-escalate without putting yourself at risk. Police academics spend an average of 110 hours training future officers on firearms and self-defense and 8 hours on subjects like conflict resolution, ethics, and hate crime. So there you go. All right, so basically they're saying that, hey, look, kill them. We'll work it out after that. You know, if you feel threatened, just kill them. So that's what it sounds like. Seems like this author is trying to say. We have to put too much weight on officer safety aspect and of it. So that's what he's saying. It's too much. You know, I don't know about, you can never put too much weight on officer safety, but you have to worry, be concerned about officer fear, level of fear, because what happens is they interpret their fear as a level of safety, and your level of fear does not necessarily correlate with safety, because you could be a chump out there, and you shouldn't be out there if you are with a gun interacting in a situation where the first thing you're going to want to do is shoot somebody where it's not necessary if you had an ounce of courage. So fear is not a reason to shoot somebody. You have to have a certain things occurring in that confrontation for you to even pull your weapon out. So that use deadly force. And I think they say that, but seems like they get away with the whole thing, I fear for my life. You know, and just say you were doing something and they're going to go with what the officer said, unless you got something that really just shows, like, what's the George Floyd situation. They can't deny, it's undeniable, you choked this man out in broad daylight while he's telling you he couldn't breathe, while people around you are telling you that kind of thing. It's hard to dispute that kind of thing, right? So anyway, so when you doing your firearms training, they said you should still be having a conversation at the same time about all those other things, just critical thinking and ethical decision making and things like that. That's a special police officer that's even moving like that, thinking like that. Forward learning, they talked about. Academics have already started altering the way they train. So they somewhere on, you know, police are training differently. And in April 4, 2015, unarmed Walter Scott is shot by police officer Michael Thomas Slager in Charleston, South Carolina. I don't know if you know about that. This guy had some child support issues. They stopped him. I think he might have had a warrant. Walter Scott, middle-aged gentleman, I think he's 40-something. How old is he? I don't know. Anyway, he broke camp, right? And then the cop tried to tase him, and then he shot him in the back. So Walter Scott was shot in the back while running away. He was unarmed and presented no threat. Walter Scott died on the scene. It wasn't a lack of training that caused the officer to murder Walter Scott. It was a lack of empathy, respect, and value for the life of Walter Scott. The law enforcement officer attempted to create a scenario that supported his actions, painting Scott as a criminal worthy of or deserving of killing. You got to go read about the story. I don't want to get into that. But this guy lied, as usual. And I get it. You do something like messed up, you're going to lie about it, try to get your way out. I understand that's how human beings are. There. Very few people say, "You got shot him in the back. I'm wrong. Take my gun and badge. Whatever y'all going to do to me, that wasn't right. I know it." He ain't going to do that. He's going to try to go home and on to the next one. Lack of police accountability comes to that. So, you know, but this guy got 20 years later that, but if it was a guy that filmed that with his cell phone, if that had not been filmed, this guy probably would have got away with that homicide. Even though I don't see how any police officer can get away with a homicide by shooting somebody multiple times in the back. That makes no sense to me. You're not in a shootout. You're just shooting a guy that's running away. That doesn't make sense. Some police agencies wipe officers' records clean. Prior misconduct after a few years is avoided to avoid public scrutiny. What is that all about? Don't they service the public? Isn't the public the greatest concern? Anyway, they say Washington Post reported that 1 in 5 police officers' names go undisclosed in fatal shootings. In 2015, the names of 210 police officers implicated in fatal shootings were not disclosed by the department to the public, highlighting a lack of transparency. The culture of impunity was much to do with the powerful police unions, which form contracts with their respective cities that often provide a shield of protection to officers accused of misconduct and thus amplify obstacles and for residents filing police abuse complaints. Places with these contracts are less likely to hold officers accountable, right? So, says Samuel Sinyagwe from Champagne Zero, a group seeking to end police brutality in the U.S. Good luck with that. And we're running out of time. I got 5 minutes left. So, if you're not held accountable, you are able or allowed to explain away why someone was killed as a result of your unjust, inhumane actions, you are more likely to repeat that behavior or someone like you is. In closing, it seems like there's a trap behind every black. There is a trap bringing black males that much closer to prison if they're lucky. No doubt blacks are getting the short end of the justice stick, and longer citizen is no novelty. Black people should learn from this. I would like to encourage my brothers and sisters to behave within the boundaries of the law. Respect yourself. Respect your family. Respect your community. Respect adults, youth, the old, the young, property, those in authority, etc. Remember, in some instances, you are the gateway to what happens in your life. Stay away from people, places, and things that diminish your existence. Mental health and physical health, spiritual health, and future. Be upright, trustworthy, dedicated, honest, kind, loving, knowledgeable, and wise. Avoid co-creating your own jeopardy and contributing to your own demise. Truancy, illiteracy, and foolishness are not wise. Change you in hopes of changing our world for the better. Remember, trouble is easy to get into and hard to get out of. If you do not control yourself, others will seek to control you. Refuse to participate in your own destruction. Ephesians 6:4, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. If black lives matter, black life must be preserved in the home, community, institution, and nations. And I want to stay with that. I want to thank everybody for listening, calling in tonight. I want to thank Blog Talk Radio, Retalk Productions, Mr. Kenneth Jones, and the creator. Everyone must work at this at all levels. This is not just something the police need to do. This is not something all racist white folks need to do. This is something black folks need to work at their abode. White folks need to work at their abode. Lawmakers need to work at their abode. You need to be responsible. And if you're not going to be ethical and moral, get out of there. Get out of law enforcement. Get out of the, government. Now, this just may sound crazy because none of this is going to happen. But ideally, that's what you should do. We need to clean house, y'all. Get these people out of there that don't mean of the country and the people of this country don't have their best interests at hand. Until then, next week, I want to thank everybody again for listening. Sorry if I was on a soapbox a little bit, but I could have said more. Believe it or not. Till next week, y'all. Peace out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.